Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we celebrate Data Privacy Day and talk about that and other consumer protection issues with our two guests who come by pretty often. Great to have them back. Sandy Chalmers is administrator in the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. Sandy, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and great to have back Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection with the department. And Michelle, great to see you again.
Good to see you too, Larry.
Well, here we've got Data Privacy Day, and I'll let me give the number first. If you have a question or comment or an experience, join in at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Let's start and talk about Data Privacy Day. What's the aim here?
Okay, yeah, this is an international day supported by a consortium of tech companies, governments, educational institutions, and the point of the day is to get consumers thinking about how they use the internet, what kind of personal details they're sharing online, and the steps they're taking to protect their personal information. So when we think first about protecting personal information, probably the most important thing is passwords. And
yeah,
we've talked a lot about that before, but we need to think about having long and strong passwords, unique passwords for every account. And then something I want to focus on this morning is privacy settings. And you think about the different applications you may use on your phone and different social networking accounts like Facebook and LinkedIn and photo sharing applications like Flickr and Snapchat and all those things. How are your privacy settings set right now? Are you comfortable with them? Do you want to have your personal details open to everybody else who uses Flickr or Facebook? Do you want to share only with your friends? Do you want to share with friends of friends? That's a decision that you need to be intentional about making. So Michelle and I today are urging people to look at the privacy settings on the accounts they use. Look at things like Flickr, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Meetup, Match.com, things like that, and make sure that the privacy settings are the way you want them to be set.
Yeah, and it's, you mentioned Snapchat, and right away I was thinking of a figure that I saw not long ago, something like 75% of all college students use Snapchat now?
Right. These are widely used. Billions of people use these social networking applications. And when you unintentionally overshare, it can be pretty catastrophic. And so, you know,
you go to the settings on your machines and...
Right. You can, it should be fairly easy to find on each one of these accounts. I know Facebook has made its privacy settings more easy to find within the last year or so. But be intentional about that. And as you use each one of these applications, think to yourself, maybe I should check my privacy settings. Because, you know, people share and they don't necessarily think about, is this something I want my boss to see? Is this something I want my mom or the people I go to church with to see? So check your privacy settings.
We have lots of callers already, some callers online. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. This personal information is, well, it's like money to out there, isn't it, for a lot of people, some who are scrupulous and some who aren't.
It sure is. There's a whole underground world of individuals behind the dark web, as they call it, just collecting this information and turning around and selling it or using it to their own advantage to take over bank accounts, selling those identities so others can use them, getting services, medical care. They may be committing crimes in your name. I mean, there's these categories of identity theft, and the basic one is monetary. Yeah. So you really need to protect your information.
You know, another one that I was thinking about, we now have all these internet-enabled cameras out there. They have people use them for baby and home monitors. They seem to be exploding in popularity, and I've wondered about the safety of those.
Yeah, the Federal Trade Commission just issued a warning on that. They tested several of these baby monitors, and the thing is there's a camera in it that goes to a video feed on your phone or your desktop. But that's another area where if you have one of those, you need to make it absolutely sure where your security settings are set and make sure that you have set your own password, that it can't be hacked into that way. So be very if you're going to use those devices, they are becoming more and more popular.
Yeah.
But make sure you understand how the security works.
This week is also, and before we go to the phones, I wanted to bring this up because it's also Tax Identity Theft Awareness Week. And that one, I've often thought about that. You know, a lot of people use online services, and you know, are those, how safe are those? And you know, people kind of worry, myself included, about that, or tax preparation fraud out there.
Yeah, it is that time of year that we need to get those taxes filed, and you need to think about how you're going to approach that. You want to file early. That's the best way to combat tax identity theft, is get your filings in as early as you can. But how are you going to file? Are you going to file using online services, and are those on your computer yourself? Make sure that your computer's up to date before you start loading any information. You've downloaded all the latest patches for virus protection and checked for malware. Then, you know, you prepare your taxes. Now, how are you going to transmit those? Making sure you're on a secure site. You're not using Starbucks or whatever coffee shop there is locally. You're on a secure service that you have your router set up secure. It's been updated, and you transmit those files that way, as opposed to, you know, some public Wi-Fi system there or at the hotel or wherever you are doing your taxes. If you're going to mail them, you're preparing them, you're printing them, and then you're taking them to the post office, the blue box. You're not just putting them in your mailbox with the big red flag saying, come get me, out there, and transmitting your taxes that way as well by mail and getting them filed and know that they're arrived.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we have callers online with questions. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Art in Stevens Point first. Art, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Larry, I had a part-time federal job last January through March, and because of that, it was dealing with the data and security, and I had, you know, fingerprinting and a lot of my identification and background checks done. I received a letter from the United States Office of Personnel Management. Quite frankly, it looked like junk mail, so I took it to the courthouse, and they did confirm that it was a legit letter. Apparently, I was part of that China hack in May and June, where there was like 21 million people's identity that was hacked into. They're offering me a suite of identity theft protection and monitoring services, and I'm not too sure if I should take advantage of it. I talked to a few people that sort of know this stuff, but not really. Some say, oh, yeah, I have a monitor everything from your accounts to credit cards, because they will do that. And some will say, no, don't do any of it, because that's just another agency that can be hacked in your identity. So I'd like to know if your person could give me some advice about where to go or what to do.
Wow, that's a, Sandy and Michelle, that's a tough, comes down to a personal decision too.
Right, and I can speak personally on this because I also got one of those letters.
No.
So I was involved in the breach as well. So it is a personal decision, and I know there are people concerned about the credit reporting bureaus who have access to, you know, reams of our most personal, private, financial information, and how secure those sites are, and those companies, how securely those companies are storing our data. I went ahead and signed up for the free protection. It's a great offer as far as I'm concerned, because to me, I am so concerned about whether somebody has this information, and I have gotten pings, you know, as we refinance our home or open new lines of credit, so I know it's working. But I think you're right, Larry, that in the end it's a personal decision whether to sign up for the monitoring.
Yeah. Michelle, do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I mean, if you are looking at different services that can provide you with watchdog-type situations to combat identity theft, whether you've been involved in a breach or not, you need to look closely at those and determine what they're asking for, how they're going to deliver that service to you, and weigh that against, you have the ability to monitor this stuff yourself, but are you going to dedicate the time and effort that's needed to do this monitoring, or should you pay someone else? And finding the best source that fits for you, and then remembering who you went with and keeping an eye on them, reading their privacy policies.
You know, 50 years from now, hopefully we're not going to have to deal with this sort of thing. There'll be something that will have overcome all this, but maybe not. Maybe not. Robert, and thanks a lot, Art, for calling. Robert in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I have used complicated passwords for everything. Minimum of 13 things with symbols and numbers and uppercase, lowercase, all of that mixed in. And it's a pain in the neck, and I'm wondering if I need to do it for anything other than financial. I don't share anything online that I would worry about getting out, but I'm wondering if I can skip all the forums, skip all the Chef's Kitchen, cookbook, etc.
Michelle, you want to?
Yeah, well, so the way that I look at it is my most complex passwords are for those things that are at the highest level. I kind of rate the different websites that I need passwords for or applications, and the ones that have the most data that I want to secure in the vault have the most complex passwords. And then I have different layers of passwords that I use that I can remember, or if I repeat them, if I'm not storing a credit card, if I'm not giving out my date of birth, my social security number, if it's just an inventory of the yarn I keep when I knit, well, then that can be a low-level password. Do I exchange information that could lead to identity theft? Do I talk about my birthday and someone can piece that together? Do I have photos behind there, as Sandy talked about earlier, that I forgot to turn off the location services on my camera and now map where I am because you can see the geotag, the GPS data behind that picture? So you need to know what's behind each of those passwords and figure out how complex it needs to be, how secure you need to keep that information.
Yeah.
A lot of apps now allow you the option of logging in through Facebook or Gmail, and you may not think that Facebook needs to be your strongest password because there is no financial data there. But when you think about logging on to eBay or Amazon and using another login to do that, I think it makes sense to use a strong password for no matter what account you're logging into.
Yeah, you have to be really careful. Thanks, Robert. Good question. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your consumer protection question or maybe experience to share. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Brianne Chasso, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network as we take a look at consumer protection issues. This is Data Privacy Day, as a matter of fact. So Michelle Ryan and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection talking about data privacy and other consumer issues. Again, call in 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Sue and Nina emailed, asked about a security monitor program called LifeLock. Is this something to look into? Is it a legitimate kind of thing? Or what do you think, Sandy?
There are several very well-known credit monitoring programs, and LifeLock is one of them. And I know LifeLock advertises a lot on TV, and I hear their ads on the radio as well. All I can say is, beyond what Michelle just said about you need to think about whether this is a service that you could do for yourself without having to pay a monthly or annual fee. But it's not a bad idea to do a quick Google search and see what other people are saying who have used this particular service. And you also might want to check to see whether there have been any federal actions against these companies. And I know there has been one, and I won't go into the details here, but some of these have been sued by the federal agencies for not keeping information as secure as they advertised.
Oh.
So that, you know, do some research before you sign up for anything.
Laura in McHenry, Illinois, up next. Hi, Laura. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My concern is that a couple of years ago when I was looking for a job, I applied at an employment agency. And when I applied, well, it looked like they had just set up the agency and, you know, there wasn't much furniture in the building or anything. But I went ahead and they asked for my social security number, address, name, birth date, everything. And I'm just wondering, it kind of leaves people vulnerable or open.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there have been any issues or problems with employment agencies that are getting all that information from people.
Is that employment agency still in business, do you know, Laura?
Well, I got another job, so I didn't follow up with them. I never did hear anything from them.
Okay. All right. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, this is true of any company, whether you're applying for a job or not, when you hand over your personal information. It's important to ask a lot of questions up front. Why do they need the information? How long will they hold on to that information? How will they destroy it? You know, when? And how do they secure it when they are holding on to that information? It's hard to apply for a job if you don't hand over things because they, like, you know, as Laura said, background checks and verifications of previous employment. So you do have to give a lot of information. One thing you might consider doing is following up with that company and asking them if they still have the records and to destroy them now if they can, since you're not working there, or make sure and verify that they were destroyed and destroyed in a safe manner, such as shredding or pulverizing, burning, something like that.
Yeah. Laura, thank you for calling. It certainly worth following up on, I would think anyway. Robert in Prairie View, your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Larry.
Thanks for calling. What have you got for us?
Well, just got our credit card statement and noticed there was an illegal activity. So we called the credit card company. They said they put into their fraud department, et cetera. We also then called their local sheriff and had them come and we filed a report. But I guess my question is, how can I find out? I've got a breach. I'd like to know, how can I find out as close as possible how somebody got my credit card to do that?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
That may be very difficult to track back because you, other than really retracing your steps, I think what's most important at this point is putting a freeze on your credit report to stop any future illegal activity, and then looking at things like your software settings and whether your firewall is turned on your computer, and just reviewing all those kinds of strategies so that going forward it won't happen again. But it could be a number. It could be somebody in a restaurant when you were on a vacation somewhere that skimmed the number. Your credit card company may be able to help you with that. If the fraud department talked to you about the illegal charge, or if you have a contact there. But otherwise, it may be a very difficult project.
Yeah,
the thing is that, you know, we called and they said, we'll look into it. But at the end of the day, I just have a feeling they say, well, we looked into it, you know, just a standard generic form letter back. And, oh, we looked into it, and it's closed. As far as they're concerned, oh, you're not going to get charged the $145 odd, and so don't worry about it. Even the sheriff had said, oh, you know, likely it won't go any further. But at the end of the day, you know, I'd like to have an idea, you know, I hand out my card very seldom places. We don't do much online banking activity, you know, credit card transactions, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but, you know, if you think about it, Robert, think about where you use that card. And any place you use that card is a potential place where it could have been taken. And you don't know. Even a place where you've maybe frequented many, many times and maybe there's a new employee or something. I don't know how you really come to...
Well, these credit card companies have larger fraud departments than they used to, and their focus is trending and identification and overlap of breaches or balances, and they're not always going to tell the consumer because they're going to work with law enforcement to investigate and determine, is it based off of a breach at a point of sale of some transaction that occurred, or is there one individual who's got a skimmer who's doing this? I mean, they're looking for these commonalities. And they're not always going to share that information because it could hinder that investigation as well. So they don't give up too easily because they lose.
They're losing a lot of money. Actually, I use credit cards a lot, even more, much more so than debit cards, because a credit card company, I've had really good success with credit card companies, and a couple of times when there was a theft, they immediately took care of it, looked into it. I got reports back from them, and future checks, even a month later, checking on, hey, did you charge that particular thing? Because it's not a normal charge for you. They were somehow keeping track of that. So I figure, well, if somebody steals that number, it's better than if they get a hold of my debit card number, for sure. So that's the way I look at it, Robert. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Clarence in Watertown, up to you. Hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning. Had a similar experience. It was a Discover card, and we were in Madison late in the afternoon, and I paid at the pump for the first time in my 60-some years. I paid at the pump and didn't realize that there was a car with out-of-state plates next to me. I didn't pay any attention to it, you know. And within 36 hours, Discover notified me that my card number had been used in New York and way out east. And they were very good. They shut it down and notified us that we wouldn't be charged for that. And they sent us new cards. And these were chipped cards.
Yeah.
So they were, like, very new. But I will never, ever, ever pay at the pump again.
Oh?
Because, like I said, that was the first time in all these years.
But are you sure it was from the pump?
I don't know, but it was the only time I had used that card in that period of the day, you know, in that time period.
Oh.
Because this was a personal card and, you know, not the card we use for business, and I was driving my personal vehicle.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, a comment?
Well, there are individuals out there that do try and put what are called skimmers on different devices such as gas pumps that are self-service or ATM machines or something that isn't being constantly monitored or handled by another professional at that industry. And so you want to, it's very difficult to see with the naked eye, or if you're not trained to be looking for this. It's a device that overlays onto the payment device, and it does collect data. And then they put those on white cards or use them online. And so it is a means of fraud and theft to get this information. So it's important that businesses do inspect their devices and check them and frequently do so. It's a possibility, but it could also be that the card had been used, you know, a year before and someone just activated it. That's the scary part of a data breach. You never know when or who this information that's been accessed is going to be used. So that security freeze and monitoring, the tools that you can use to combat are very important.
Yeah. So even a month later, I mean, remembering where you, I mean, you can go back and look at your record, but I mean, just off the top of your head, I wouldn't be able to remember.
Right, and it's harder to pinpoint the longer you wait from when you actually take the data.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Clarence, for calling. Appreciate your call. Deb in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question is about the credit cards that are now coming out with chips in them.
Yep.
I'm wondering if there's any additional security precautions we should consider. Are there additional ways that people can steal our data or be frauded?
Yeah, I've got my cards are chipped now. Sandy?
Well, I think the key here is to remember that no financial transaction is ever completely locked off from theft. So it's not a foolproof system. And treat that chip and PIN or chip and signature card just like you treated your own card and keep it protected. Treat it just like you would cash. And otherwise, it's definitely more secure than the old cards with the magnetic strip. But it's not theft proof by any means.
I understand that in Europe, where people are supposed to be careful because there's people can walk by and scan those numbers out of your wallet or your purse.
Sure, that's a different form of a reader. We talked about the skimmer, and that's grabbing the mag strip. A reader is trying to grab the chip technology. And so there are little sleeves or wallets or purses that you can buy that kind of block that reader technology from picking up the chip. But you also then need to be cautious about the representations, because there are different forms of readers, and you need to be very, very close for that reader to work as well. So don't spend more than you're willing to lose out should that technology not really work.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Open lines, we'll get you on pretty quickly now at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Harry in Green Bay emailed that he receives a robocall just about every day, including one this morning, and it's touted as the last and final call, but it's been going on for nearly a year, and it's about about credit card insurance. Any thoughts on how to stop them? Boy.
I wish I had the magic answer on that one. These robocalls, as they're known, are just a plague, and they are so frustrating for people, especially for people who spend their days at home and hear their phones ring and ring and ring. The best thing to do is to not pick up, and if you have caller ID, screen your calls before picking up. If for some reason you do pick up and hear that automated voice message start, just hang up and don't sit and listen to the message. And if you're if you're prompted to press a button to discontinue the calls, don't press a button. It's just that's a scheme they have to identify your number as one that they can continue to pester because they know that it's a live number.
Gary on Facebook says a credit freeze in Wisconsin costs $10 per credit reporting agency. He believes it's free in other states. Why do we pay this fee? Is there a way to change that? I don't know. Is there a $10 fee?
Yeah. The state law allows the credit reporting agencies to charge up to $10. And I believe that a bill has been introduced now that addresses this, or maybe for people who have had their identity stolen, or maybe for the elderly. But there's some category of people where that $10 fee would be waived. So as with any law change, he can contact his representatives in Madison and convey his feelings and concerns on this issue.
Jerry in Bayfield has a comment. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have an issue with my credit card.
Okay.
Someone had gotten into my account online and spent all my reward points.
Oh.
And this happened last June. The credit card company told me they'd put in a fraud report. And they did that, apparently, but they said it'd be 90 days and all my points would be, you know, reinstated.
Yeah.
That's never happened. Is there anywhere I can go with that?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Jerry, you could file a complaint with Consumer Protection, and we could contact the credit card company on your behalf regarding this issue and see where that fraud report landed. If they'd communicated with you that they were going to reinstate those points, we'd follow through to work in assisting that happens. You can file that complaint by calling 1-800-422-7128 or go online and you can file the complaint right there or download a form, and that is datcp.wi.gov.
Could you repeat that, please?
It's datcp.wi.gov. It's our department initials, Department Ag Trade Consumer Protection.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you get lots of calls on that phone, don't you?
Oh, we get, 20,000 calls a year or so?
Yeah, it's pretty busy, and email questions as well is an option. So that can be more 24/7 when you're thinking of it, and we'll get back to you during the day.
Mm-hmm. Diane in Madison has a question. Hi, Diane.
Hi there. Say, thanks for taking my call. I got had a fraud against an account that I had opened, you know, not long ago. Somebody made a purchase through a store and had it delivered, and I found out about it and pursued it with the bank, and nothing ultimately happened other than, you know, changing my credit card. But you know, they determined where it was sent to. They had a house address, but nothing was done beyond that. So I just wonder, you know, why these things never seem to go to court. Nothing happens. There's no reason not to do the fraud for the criminal.
Yeah, well, you'd think if it was something was being delivered to a house, they'd have a pretty good...
Oh, there's a full investigation behind it. Just because it's delivered to that house doesn't mean it's that individual that committed the crime. It could be someone else. There could be an association. But I think there's more action than people see in this regards as far as... federal layers of government and these credit card companies following up with these individuals.
Yeah, I think there may be things going on, Diane, that you haven't, you know, that you're not aware of.
Yeah, it just doesn't make our local news.
Pat in Cumberland has a question. Hi, Pat.
Hi. My question is this. I was sitting next to a person on a flight back from Fort Lauderdale on Monday, and he was telling me that his wallet was stolen in a cab ride, and one of the cards that he lost was his Social Security card.
Oh.
I mean, besides that, a lot of other important cards, but I was worried most about the Social Security number. I mean, what does a person do if that happens?
Wow, that is a big problem because that it's the number that's used to file taxes and sign up for Medicare, and you know, it goes on and on.
Yeah,
this person should contact the Social Security Administration directly, and I would go directly to the closest local office and have them help you. And the Social Security Administration will issue a new card and new number in exceptional situations, but it's very difficult. And then just think of the ramifications of that, you know, having a new, basically a new identity for yourself.
Yeah.
So
right.
It is, that's why we say don't carry your Social Security card with you in your wallet, because if you happen to lose it or it's stolen, it creates just numerous problems.
Yeah. Well, then I looked at my own billfold, and here one of my insurance cards has the Social Security number on it as well, mine. And I'm thinking, you're supposed to have your insurance card with you, and yet you have the most critical piece of documentation you own there for anybody to look at or steal.
But well, that's like Medicare.
I wonder if that is your Medicare card.
It probably is.
Yeah, we recommend doing, because you're told to have your Medicare card with you, make a copy of your Medicare card and block out the first five digits of your number and carry that with you. And then if, God forbid, you are in some kind of emergency situation, somebody can come in after the fact and bring your actual card.
Yeah, I see. That's a good idea. Very good.
Very good.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Ryden from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at all kinds of consumer protection issues today, including tax identity theft, data privacy issues. Today is Data Privacy Day. This is Tax Identity Theft Week. And Michelle Ryden and Sandy Chalmers from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guests today. If you have a complaint and want to file a complaint, you can go to 800-422-7128 or go to their website, datcp.wi.gov. We have links. Brianne, I'm sure, has links up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, so you can... You didn't get the number, or you want to go to the website and you don't have that, just go to our Facebook page and it'll be there. Keith in Janesville has a question. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Larry. How are you this morning?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
My question is, many restaurant chains have gone to these individual kiosks at each table to pay your bill.
Yeah.
How safe are those? I wonder, because when you hand your credit card to somebody to take and run for you, they also have the security code on the back of it. So I'm wondering which one is better.
Hmm.
That's a tough one, because how secure the restaurant kiosk is depends on how secure their network and system is, and that they're transmitting. Is the kiosk storing it, or is it Wi-Fi connected, which it will be if your bill's there? But how secure of a system? When did they last update it? Virus protection? Could it be a point of sale intrusion, a web app attack by some hacker? So it's a difficult question, because you just don't know how they back up their system.
Okay.
So that's not so helpful. Or do you hand it to someone who's going to walk away that you don't know? So I like the ones where I walk up to the cash register and pay and can watch my card the whole time.
Yeah.
Not many of those exist anymore, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Right. I tend to keep my eyes on my card when I hand it over and watch that person walk the whole path.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Keith, appreciate your call. Peg in McFarland, up to you next. Hi, Peg.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About 2 weeks ago, there was an article in the Wisconsin State Journal Sunday paper about freezing your credit. So I called all three credit agencies, put a hold on mine. It cost me $10 for each one, but I heard back from two of them, but I never heard back from the third.
Hmm.
And it was Experian is the one I haven't heard anything from.
Yeah, I think you should call their customer service number and follow up and see whether they've received it or whether their processing is delayed or what exactly the holdup is. But
I called back and asked to talk to somebody, but how do you get to talk to somebody? I mean, the recording came on I couldn't get to talk to a person.
Why don't you file a complaint with our office? We have some individuals we work with directly in government relations. And, you know, while we're working on your complaint, you could get the information and just contact us. Hopefully there'll just be a crossover in time. But if there is an issue, we can help get to the bottom of that.
Okay, and that number again?
1-800-422-7128.
422-7128.
Yep.
I'll do that. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Lance in, I'm not sure where Lance is. Ishpeming?
Ishpeming.
Ishpeming?
That's correct, Ishpeming.
Ishpeming, sorry, okay.
You did good with it, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment. Earlier they were talking about the different watchdog organizations that you can get to, you know, kind of monitor your credit. And I understand that, but I think one thing I wanted to interject is being a good steward of your own credit report also by monitoring your bills. Because my wife and I had a situation a few months ago where somebody got a hold of our card information. We don't really know that. But it actually, the credit card company traced it back to Great Britain. Now, I've never been to Great Britain, and that's where the 36-cent charge came from. And the credit card company advised us that what they do is they do like a little tester. They put like a very minuscule amount out there and hope that you'll just kind of ignore it. But it doesn't go away. What happens is that's their, they kind of got you on a hook. And the next month, before you get your bill, they'll really hit you for whatever they can get, you know, hundreds of dollars or maybe thousands of dollars, depending on what your card limit is, probably. And, you know, I just think the old-fashioned kind of watch your own back to a certain degree, you know, and not rely on everybody else as well. You know, it works well for my wife and I anyway to kind of check, like you were saying earlier, about trying to monitor your own transactions. If you do a lot of them, you're kind of, did you go to the grocery store or did I? You know how that goes.
Yeah.
You know, but that was kind of one that we thought was interesting. So I just wanted to share that with some of the listeners.
Yeah, thanks, Lam. Well, I'm with you on that one, Lam. I go check my bill every single month and go through them.
Yeah, what he's talking about is Consumer 101 and just being a good steward of your own resources. And we talk about this on a regular basis, how important it is to look at your monthly statements, your financial statements, your phone bill, and all those accounts to make sure that the charges are accurate. And also reviewing your credit reports on a regular basis to make sure that no lines of credit have been opened without your knowledge, because that's a tip-off that you may be an identity theft victim. But I think his point is very well taken, that this has become kind of a lost skill. And we do, because we do get those fraud calls from the fraud departments of our banks or our credit card companies, we kind of lean on them and don't take control of our own financial situation.
Yeah, very, very good. Thanks, Lance, for calling. And Jim in Barron, Wisconsin, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
This is an interesting story. We're on the internet for rental property up in northern Wisconsin. And the exchange is usually wired, and then we send the refunds back. But we've had on three different occasions someone texting us saying they want to rent the property. They're from Italy. They can't wire the money, but what they'll do is send a check. So they'll send the check by Federal Express, and then about 10 days later, they'll say, oh, I can't get my visa to pass. Can you just wire that money back to me? So the check hasn't cleared yet, and they're trying to get you to wire the money to strange places like Egypt and the like. So it's an interesting scam.
It is indeed.
It's a very popular, interesting scam. We refer to it as the fake check scam, where someone will overpay, or in this case, pay then cancel, and want you to wire back money or send cash in some form. And then the check is bad, and you don't find out for weeks that it's a bad check because it looks like it's going to clear, and now you're out that money. And if you've also sent a good, because sometimes it's for a car purchase or some antique or something you may be selling on Craigslist, for an example. So it's you need to be very cautious. Whenever wiring money comes in to a stranger, that's a first sign of no good.
Yep, for sure. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see. Let's go. Sue in Roscoe, Illinois, wondered about the safety of encryption services. I guess we've kind of talked about that a little bit, like those offered through Apple. Anything additional for comment on? No, we kind of covered that pretty well. Joe in Fond du Lac, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, glad to be on the air.
What can we do for you?
So I recently got a new Samsung phone, which you've probably seen the commercials for. They're advertising Samsung Pay everywhere.
Yeah.
And one of the really nice features I discovered with it is the cards that I have loaded on there, if I swipe them or if I use Samsung Pay to pay, Samsung Pay will actually send me an alert on my phone saying that a charge went through. And the really nice feature about that I found out is one time somehow my credit card number had gotten stolen or whatnot, and an individual somewhere in New York had charged my card, and I found out within seconds because Samsung Pay alerted me that a charge went through, and I was able to determine that that wasn't me.
Yeah, that's a nice security feature. And a lot of the companies that offer prepaid debit cards have similar features where you can get a text or an email every time you use that card. One thing that we have been seeing is fake alerts where it looks like an alert from WhatsApp or maybe one of PayPal or one of these features, and it's fake. And when you click on a link, it downloads malicious software onto your phone or your desktop. So that's something to be aware of. Make sure that those notifications are really from who you think they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The first thing I did is I went to my banking app to check, and there was the pending charges there. So then I called Chase right away.
Ah, that's the way to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call and that information. Darcy in Greendale has something for us. Hi, Darcy.
Hi. I was planning a trip to go somewhere for a vacation, and I was online for a rent by owner site, and I had ingested my email address and I think a phone number. So I didn't give a lot of information because I don't like to do that when I have the option. Well, I got an email saying, hot deal, got to have it by tomorrow afternoon. It was about a quarter of the price of any other properties I wanted to rent. And it said, so I they weren't very specific about dates or what property it was. So that kind of was a red flag to me. But I did email them back and said, you know, can you clarify the dates and the property? And they write back and said, well, it's this date, and we have to have payment by this time, and we don't need a check. We can just have you wire it. And that's when my tingly senses went off, and I didn't email them again, but it was definitely a scam.
Oh.
Yeah, we have heard quite a bit about this with vacation rentals and apartments for rent, where a crook will basically steal a listing, including the photo of the property and details, and set up a fake listing. And you are absolutely right to be tipped off by the request to wire transfer money. And we say whenever somebody you don't know personally asks you to wire money, it's most likely a scam.
There you go. Thanks, Darcy, for calling. And let's go to, let's see, we got Danielle in Appleton up there, I think. Oh, not quite up yet. Carla in Green Bay emailed that her credit card fraud was at random. The card company called because she had a charge of 99 cents and then a charge of $380. The company said that hackers will enter numbers randomly and charge 99 cents if it goes through, then they repeat those same numbers for a real charge. Now, that is kind of scary.
They try anything. So that sounds like something that they would do. I mean, it's that test charge, that small amount again, see if it'll work, and then they'll follow through with the next charge. It doesn't have to be overseas. It can be right next door.
All right, let's go. Maybe we'll get Danielle on. Yeah, Danielle, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. This is my first time on the air. I am calling because a couple months ago I left my purse in public and my card was stolen and about $400 was spent on it. I eventually noticed that my bank account was empty and my card was missing. Now, this wouldn't have prevented someone from using my card in person in stores, but you were talking before about the fear of handing your credit card over to a waiter or waitress and the fear that they would write down your card information and be able to make online payments. I was suggested by a coworker to take a key and scratch off the 3-digit security code in the back of the card so that if somebody does look at your card, they can't memorize or write down the number and then use it for payments online.
Hmm. And then you have to keep, you yourself remember your number.
Yep.
Yeah.
Michelle? There is the potential at some point of sales that you will be rejected then, because there are some systems that verify card is present, and the way they do that is with that 3-digit code on the back, and the clerk is required to punch it in. So if it's not there, have a backup form of payment if that's the choice you...
Or I suppose you could tell the person if you're standing there, but
if
even
they'll
then,
believe you or do it, because it's their agreement with the credit card company that they'll do this in their system of verification. This is that card.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, all right. Great. Thanks, Danielle, for calling. And we have next Karen in Green Bay. Karen, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Just a quickie. My husband and I had a vehicle for sale on Craigslist, and we got contacted by a buyer who wanted us to do it through PayPal. So I set up a PayPal account, and he wanted me to wire him money back after he deposited money in our account for transfer fees and some garbage anyway. So I called PayPal to make sure that the money was actually in our account, and it wasn't. So I texted the guy back and said, sorry, we're not interested. And he sent us a picture of people in handcuffs and said he was going to come and arrest us because we...
Oh, my goodness. We'll talk some more about that. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back. Please stay with us. We're taking a look at consumer protection issues today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it. Questions for them? Maybe you've got an experience to share or a question about credit card fraud or any other kind of consumer protection issue. Call us at 800-642-1234. email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We had Karen from Green Bay who sold a vehicle on Craigslist, but there were some shenanigans. The buyer wanted to use PayPal, but there was a scam involved. And then when they were talking on the phone, I believe, the person threatened to have them arrested and everything else. Sandy, this kind of threat happens in these scams, does it not?
Yeah, and these crooks don't have anything to lose, really, by threatening you, because they're probably sitting halfway across the world where they know that people like Michelle can't get at them.
Mm-hmm.
But we hear so often about Craigslist scams and PayPal scams. And what we recommend doing is, if you're going to list particularly a high dollar value item on Craigslist, take the time to read through the recent scams and fraud advice that Craigslist has right on its site, so you know what you're likely going to hear, and just understand how you can protect yourself. I know there are a lot of PayPal escrow scams, and that sounds like what this was. But just take the time to read on PayPal and Craigslist about what the most recent scams are, so you're best prepared to protect yourself.
Ray in West Allis has something for us. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show. A caller earlier said they were getting unsolicited phone calls.
Right, robocalls. Mm-hmm.
Right. There's a service, a free service called NoMo Robo, and I believe their website is just NoMoRobo.com. You can forward your calls to them. And if they're a robocall, your phone rings once and stops ringing. They intercept the call and hang up on it. If it's not a robocall, your phone is, that call is returned to your phone, and you can pick it up as normal. I've been using it for a couple of months, and it works really well.
Oh, excellent. And I actually think this came up once on a show, Sandy.
Yeah, we have talked about that before, and it's a great service. The problem is, if you have an old copper wire linked phone, it won't work. This is something that only works if you have voice over internet digital phone service.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of people in the state who are still connected via copper wire, and it won't work for them.
Well,
but
I'm connected via copper wire. Oh, you're right. It's an IS. It's a voice over IP phone.
Yeah, but there are things you can do if you're on one of the older networks, old copper wire networks. You can check your phone and see what kind of call blocking features it might have, so you could kind of blacklist a phone number. That, you know, if you're repeatedly called over and over by one number, you could blacklist that, and your phone, the phone itself, will block that number.
Oh, so that's another way to do it if you've got the old system.
Right,
kind
and
of.
Then for your smartphones, there are numerous apps available for iPhones and Androids both. So you can read the reviews and kind of shop around for something that might work for your smartphone.
Mm-hmm. NoMo Robo. M-O Robo, I guess is how it's spelled. Thanks, Ray, for calling. Monica in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee area. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'd like to know why banks can use your Social Security number and some of these other things, and on their they can even use your number to find to another business place. I have a letter that says that for our marketing purposes, to offer products and services to you, well, they don't have my information for that. Or did I want to know why they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
oftentimes there's a permission layer there. So they're seeking you to grant them permission to be able to share with their partners and affiliates. And you can, through privacy and policies, say you decline for that sharing. It might mean, depending upon those relationships, you don't end up doing business with that entity. Medical is similar to that they have relationships with insurance and drug providers. Banking can be like that. Other insurances are like that as well. So be looking at those privacy policies and what they're asking permission for.
Okay, something good to think about. Thank you, Monica, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Dave and Dunbarton a chance to join us as well. Dave, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you, and what a almost timely topic, because last night the scam hit us. I'll try to be brief, but 2 years ago, with an old desktop computer, we get a virus. Well, that's inevitable. Everybody gets one, so dang if another pop-up didn't come up and said, Microsoft has notified us about your problem. We call the phone number. The guy tells us how, yep, Microsoft is so darn busy and so many things to fix, it's cheaper to farm that out to us in a foreign country. Very honest man, I say to myself, and made sense to us. So we paid about approximately $150 for him to take the virus off.
Oh.
Everything's fine. Thank you. A year ago, we buy a laptop. 2 months ago, the laptop gets a virus. Well, dang it, if that good old pop-up doesn't come up, we call, and he asks a few questions. We explain it's a laptop now, and he says, oh, yes, I can tell that, and takes the virus off 2 months ago. Last night, he calls us and says, hi, you remember me? Oh, yeah, not by name, but yes, we do. Well, we're authorized now to give you a refund for that work. You were overcharged. Well, that's great. Send us the money. Oh, no. We can do it quicker than that. You have online banking? And we said, well, yes, we do. So he goes to this, and up comes a screen with an identical pirated symbol of HP and Microsoft right on this form. And he takes us through 2 to 3 pages, and then he gets to, now enter your banking number so we can direct deposit. And we said, not on your life. And we debated about 5 minutes. He thought he had us. And then I said, so the last 100 people that you did this to, 100 said, no problem, here it is. He said, absolutely. I said, well, you've never spoken to anybody from Wisconsin then. and he finally said, well, sir, I got to tell you right now, you can either give me the numbers or I'm locking your computer for 5 years. And I said, you're going to make my computer a tabletop coaster? If I don't give you personal information, it's your choice. And he started laughing and calling us names. And before we could get the computer shut off, we did not go to the length of giving him any numbers, but we did follow through what he was telling us to do. And he was taking over the computer. He was in there. So we got that stopped, but it was a trip to Best Buy. And they're going to fix it, and we'll buy their protection program, which we shouldn't in the first place. So my two comments are, please, everybody out there, buy wherever you buy your computer, get their software protection. And two, as soon as they say, let me have your banking number, don't ever do it. And Microsoft does not farm anything out. I learned that, too.
Now, quite the story, Michelle.
It sure is. I'm really glad Dave shared it so people can appreciate what we're trying to say all the time, that it does happen. The calls, this Microsoft scam can come by phone, not just a pop-up on your computer, but people will call and say your computer's transmitting a virus to us and we need access to the computer, and then they'll charge and they're just trying to load malware on. They tried to do the ransomware, which is take the computer hostage, and then unless you pay at the end of that. So really good that Dave shared, but it's really important just to hang up, don't connect, don't give out your information, and keep your computer secure and up to date.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Dave. That's quite the story. You had us there. We were kind of on pins and needles, so wondering whether or not you gave them the bank number, and I'm sure glad you... Sure glad you didn't do that. I'm sure glad you didn't do that. Well, you can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question or comment. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And let's take another call. In just a second, we'll take another call. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Any new phone scams out there, Sandy, by the way,
The one that we hear about the most repeatedly and overwhelmingly are these IRS calls.
Oh.
That sound like they're from the IRS. Very threatening, again, threatening to take you to jail or to court. You know, that has been probably the most prevalent phone scam now for a couple of years.
Still out there. So the IRS doesn't do that, right?
No. If there's a problem, they'll send you a letter through postal mail, and that's how they notify people, and they certainly don't
send robocalls
and threaten to take you to court.
Deborah in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm going to try and make this as concise as possible, but I just remembered another thing too. But the first thing that happened was at Walmart, I got $40 back using my debit card, and it was at a self serve checkout at a Walmart, and it was really it's like they're low. It's not in your face like a lot like at Walgreens. And so when the money came out and it was really busy, I forgot to take my money. But then when I realized it, I went back. I was still in the store. They checked the security cameras and they found the person. They said, "Well, we know who they are because they used a bank card, but we can't tell you." I said, "I don't care. I don't want to know. I just want my money back." So that's one thing. But the main thing here is, I noticed on my bank statement recently. I noticed on a September statement a $17.95 deduction from TransUnion. I'm like, "What's this?" And then I opened up my December statement. There it was again. So I called my bank. It was for 4 months, September, October, November, December. But now there's no money in now. I'm keeping my balance. There's no money in my account, so it's not possible for them to deduct it. But when I first saw it, I saw the terminal number. I wrote down that there's two like important numbers on your bank statement, and I Googled the terminal number, and it came up. It was immediate. This girl had the same problem with that terminal number. It's a 961 or 90. It had five digits. It was a 96015 or something. And hers was with 1-800-Flowers. But hers was for 7 months, and she was trying to figure out what was going on. So, but mine's with TransUnion, and I talked to the girl at my bank, and she said, like, it's showing as a purchase, that I'm purchasing it. And so I was just checking my phone before I called you, and it says, now it's coming up under my son's email because he used to have this phone, and so I kept looking for it under mine, but it was under his. TransUnion tip for Deborah: a special offer from TransUnion customers. Like, I'm a customer. See, it came first popped up when I was on a housing thing, like FRAA or some housing foreclosure site, and then they put you over to like. You should get a credit report, you know, and then do get a credit report from TransUnion for a dollar. So, and then, but I didn't do it. I never did it. I never gave my bank account number out to anybody. But then I Googled TransUnion and all of this mess, and there's a list of horror stories about TransUnion. They're thieves, and it goes on and on. So that's it.
Well, that's quite a story as well, Sandy. And Michelle.
Looked
at you and said Sandy, but
no,
Michelle, go ahead.
It sounds very similar to different situations that are called cramming, where you get a low monthly fee charged to your credit card for a service that you haven't signed up for, some kind of club or membership or buyer's club or some kind of service that you may or may not have affirmatively purchased, and it's ongoing. I would encourage, Deborah, for you to file a complaint so we can look into this, especially if you're seeing other things out there about this ongoing scam. But we would want to look at this matter to see if there is some credit card cramming going on with some affiliate type situation. And so 1-800-422-7128 is where you can call and get a complaint form.
Okay, it's 1-800-422-7128, or go to datcp.wi.gov. And we have all that on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Brianne's got it up there, so if you didn't get it, you can certainly get it in pretty quickly. Thanks, Deborah, for calling. Oh, that's well, not only irritating, but expensive when things like that happen, obviously. Ann in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. The gentleman a couple of callers ago caused me to want to really call about this. About a year ago, it actually was in April or May. I had gone to a site. I was Googling a recipe, actually, and I'd gone to a site, and it, you know, something popped up on the screen saying, this could contain malware. Don't go any further. Don't shut off your computer. Call this number. So I did, and I think there was Microsoft maybe in that little box. I did, and I believe that the person on the phone also identified it as Microsoft, and they got into our computer. I ended up having to hand the phone. This was a very lengthy time on the computer, on the phone, I'm sorry, and I ended up having to hand the phone over to my husband because I had to get to an appointment. And what ended up occurring is that this person who was in our computer said that we didn't have the proper protection and sold two programs. So it all feels legit. I mean, this, nothing has occurred funny in our computer since, but I've always been concerned about that, worried about that, thinking that at some point, you know, maybe this is also part of the scam, is that, you know, they sit and let you think that you've gotten this good stuff, and someday.
Well, and if whether or not they have access to get in, I you know, I'd be worried about online banking.
Yeah, which I do. So, I mean, how do I undo this, or how do I investigate this? You know, I don't have any... I guess I could look up what the charge was and go from there. But what do you suggest I do to just...
Oh, man.
Well, a couple of thoughts. If you purchase something like Norton Suite to protect your computer, you will get a pop-up when your subscription ends. So I don't know whether that is what happened and you got a regular... expected pop-up from your known company, or whether your computer was already infected with some kind of malware and it was a phony company that sold you something. So it's hard to know which one it is, but I guess the point here is that it's so important to have the latest security software and the latest web browser and operating system. Keep your computer up to date, and a lot of these problems will be taken care of.
Yeah.
So you have to be proactive with this.
Yeah.
And so
what
would you recommend? What would you do if you were in that situation, Michelle?
I'd probably take mine to a computer doctor. So whether it be a Best Buy or a local, someone who is an expert at this, and have them run a cleanse or just very much check to make sure there's not anything loaded.
And you're in Madison, Ann, and there are companies in Madison legitimate companies that can do that for you. I'm sure Michelle was. That's
sure. There's the well known, the Best Buy, the Geek Squad, and then there's other local computer doctors, and you just get their resumes and check them out.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Well, if Best Buy is on the list, I believe that's where we bought this one. I know we've bought other computers there, so
yeah.
That's to know that that's on the list of good places to go. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Diane and Racine, thanks for calling.
Hi.
You have a quick comment.
Yeah, probably for the last 6 months or so, up until just recently, I've gotten bombarded with phone calls from people claiming to be from the IRS. And the man has a very strong Indian accent. And what set me off to figuring out that this was a scam, first off, was that he was trying so hard to sound like he had an English accent, like he was American, that he was speaking so slow, like he was reading off a script. So I started questioning him. He had the last 4 digits of my Social Security number, and I said, well, if you're actually from the IRS, you should have the rest of my Social Security number. He couldn't provide me with that information. He told me that I was being investigated for tax fraud and tax.
Oh, and you know what? We're still running out of time, but that's exactly the scam you were talking about earlier, Sandy.
Right, and sometimes they will give you their IRS badge number, and they may have a part of your Social Security number, but don't be fooled. And you can call us at 1-800-422-7128, and we'll help you with this. Or you can call the IRS directly.
And with that, we have to close. Thank you so much, Sandy and Michelle. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Ryden from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Again, we have their 800 number and their site up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can certainly get it there. And great to have them on. And they will be back, and we will go through this again with them. And again, thank you so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.